Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee, for this opportunity to update you on the expansion of the BC waiver statewide. You just heard a whole long list of very specific things that the department has been asked to achieve through the House Bill 916. And all of those things are incorporated within the strategic plan we're going to go through. But I think what's important to do is to read through that legislation, because I think underlying all those activities is a real commitment to a series of values and priorities that this General Assembly put forward to us. You've given us a very clear direction on where we should drive the system. And underneath that vision is a real commitment to improving the care for people in our system and making sure that more people have access to those services. There's a real commitment to the public management of our system. And there's a commitment to have us utilize the tools of managed care to be more effective and more efficient in using the resources that we have. And we need to do that because the demand for services continues to increase and will become even greater as we move toward implementation of the federal health care reform legislation. We've been asked to maintain a local presence in each of our communities, even while we are consolidating and saving administrative overhead by reducing the number of LMEs that we have. And there is clearly throughout the entire bill the primacy and the importance of stakeholder input, stakeholder involvement, and partnership with our families, our service recipients, providers, and especially with our LMEs that are transitioning to become MCOs. What you have there is specifically what is in the legislation. It asked the department to take the lead on developing what essentially is an implementation plan. It's called strategic plan here, but really it was a call for us to delineate to you exactly the steps we were going to take to achieve this statewide rollout within this two-year period of time, asking us to create very specific objectives, deadlines, time frames, clear accountability for how we were going to proceed. We consider this an initial plan. I think any good plan is one that is open to revision. As you learn more, as you have more experience, as you receive input from your stakeholder groups. So what we're presenting to you is a starting point. We are charged with monitoring how this rollout occurs and to ensure that it is successful, and to come to you with quarterly progress reports to keep everyone informed and to keep us on track. This strategic plan was organized around a framework of what the goals for the waiver were, and those goals are there on the side, really about improving the access and the quality for services, of making sure that we were achieving positive outcomes in people's lives, that we would make sure that we were improving access and integration with primary health care for those individuals who had behavioral health needs, that we would improve the effective management of the resources that we had within the system. We have a series of we base this both on what we do well, but also being honest in terms of what we need to do better, and also challenges that we have ahead of us. This plan will also let us communicate within a shared framework so that we can report on the various activities we're to be achieving, time frames, be able to communicate with the public, with you, with our stakeholders around what our priorities are so that they're, it's very clear to everybody what we're trying to do. As I said, we had a relatively short time frame to pull this together. This bill passed at the end of June, and we are here today. We took the lead and did a very, very initial draft. It was, and we wanted to do it that way because we wanted to have people have the opportunity to have input at the very beginning, not present them with a completed plan, but really to say, here are our initial thoughts. Please tell us what else we should do. We put that initial draft on the web, asked people to provide us with feedback, and we got voluminous comments, about 63 pages of legal size responses. We have incorporated all of those into the that we could. Well, a good proportion of the comments that we received weren't really comments but questions. And so we will be preparing a document that is a response to those questions so that people can get feedback on that. In addition, we also went to our already existing stakeholder groups. One of them is called the External Advisory Team, which has representatives from a broad range of provider advocacy, family consumer groups, reviewed that document with them, received their feedback and incorporated that, also had meetings with representatives from the Council of Community Programs, which represents the LMEs. Based on that, we made significant changes and improvements to the plan. The plan is nearly complete. It's just going through final edits, and you should receive that complete report very, very shortly. So the plan itself is organized around six main objectives, and each of those objectives has one or more action steps that are important to achieving that particular objective. In addition, each of those action steps has a series of activities, and this presentation does not include those because in the interest of time, we would need a lot more time to go through all of those. But those activities have specific timelines, time frames, identify who is responsible for accomplishing it, and when you receive that report, all of those will be included. So the first objective really is to oversee this whole system change. And included in this first objective are the development of the strategic plan and also the identification of those LMEs who will move forward to become MCOs. And as Mr. Parker reported, we have completed that initial phase. We have a few LMEs that are still in process, but certainly by the end of this month, we will have identified all those LMEs that will be moving forward. The second objective is looks at how we will partner with the MCOs to make sure that we are successful in the implementation. So a couple of main pieces here. One is the establishment of what we call the interdepartmental monitoring teams. This really is an opportunity for each of the MCOs to meet monthly with staff from both of our divisions, DMA and DMH, DDSAS, as well as to receive feedback from local provider network individuals and the local CFAC. Each of the MCOs is required to develop implementation plan opportunity for them to report to us on how they are progressing on that implementation plan. We also will be required to conduct readiness reviews for each of the MCOs before they can proceed. The third objective really looks at how we're going to support the development of best practice services and supports for people with mental health, DD, and substance abuse needs. These first three action steps cover The identification and the promotion of best practice services for mental health, substance abuse, and crisis services. The additional action steps for this objective focus on the development and the transition to the innovations waiver for intellectual and developmental disabilities population. Requires us to develop ways that we can look at outcomes, what impact is this having on the lives of people, and also to monitor the success of that transition. Objective four really is about communication and how we partner and communicate with all of our various stakeholder groups. Part of this is just creating processes for how we're going to communicate, and of course, in developing those processes, we need their input to even do that. We are aware that in any kind of a change process, having good information and communication is essential to success. Our fifth objective really is around increasing the knowledge of the system. This is a new environment that we are entering in, really transitioning from more of a fee-for-service environment to a very managed, capitated system. And so across our system, we need information so that people understand the changes, but we also need to assist and facilitate the learning of new skills and the learning of new processes. So that the waiver implementation is successful. The sixth objective really, and this has an awful lot of action steps because it's very important to us, is the collaboration with CCNC and the importance of the integration of primary health care with behavioral health care. The four-quadrant model that is reflected here is about how with CCNC we coordinate care effectively. Where there's co-occurring disorders, who is taking primary responsibility for making sure that people get the services they need in the most time-effective manner? And you can see there are a whole number of expectations around how the MCOs and CCNCs are to interface with each other. We actually have contractual expectations both on the CCNC side and on the MCO side about how they will be able to work together and work effectively with the people that we serve. I think what's critical to our success is that we have a very strong process for evaluation so that we know whether we're achieving our goals and our outcomes, and that we even have the capacity to make adjustments if we need to do that. What you can see, next slide. We have a whole series of processes that we have in place to do this monitoring. Some of them are internal to our division. Some of them are external. A couple I just want to emphasize for you. One more down, Jim. The top one there, that external quality review, that is required by CMS. It is an external independent reviewing entity that comes in annually to look and make sure that the MCOs are meeting CMS requirements. So that will take place. That has been occurring at PBH, and it will be in place for all of our MCOs. I've already talked about the IMT, which is specific to each of the managed care organizations. But a few down there, you'll see EMT, and that is a structure that we will be initiating within the next couple of months. And that really gives us an opportunity to involve stakeholders, involve both of our divisions, to be able to look across the MCOs, to review performance, to look at trends that we see emerging, to hear from communities about what's working and what isn't working, so that we can, as a system, move forward and make sure that we are achieving the goals that we want to. The Global Continuous Quality Improvement is a committee that is led by DMA, again, looking at our performance outcomes and making sure that we are on track. So going forward, what we are presenting to you today, again, is a very initial plan. We already have moved forward, have met some of the action steps that we, or activities that we have in place in the plan. But we really are committed to an ongoing process of evaluation. Are we hitting our targets? Do we need to make some adjustments? And if we do, we will make those improvements and change the plan accordingly. Of course, we'll be reporting to you quarterly, and we'll look forward to your feedback and input on that as well.
All right. Next. Yeah, go ahead, Chairman Dollar.
Thank you. Just a couple of quick questions, Dr. Melcher. One, and you may have said this, and I just missed it. When do you believe this strategic plan will be complete and be ready to be presented or forwarded to us?
I'm really hopeful we can get this to you by the end of next week or early the following. We're that close.
Okay. And along that line, and I think you touched on this, but if you may want to elaborate a little bit, some of us have heard a number of concerns in the draft, I suppose it was the draft or one of the drafts of the strategic plan, so I'm not surprised you got that many comments. But once that plan is presented to us, obviously we'll have some additional time to take a look at that, this committee or others, and make additional adjustments as they might need to be made. That would be a fair statement, right?
Certainly, when you receive it, if you have questions, call us, and if there are things you think we missed or need to add, of course.
Okay. Let me touch on a couple of other quick things. You brought up in your presentation the coordination with CCNC, and I just want to add our interest in ensuring that everything is done, and I know that I've heard this, that it is being done, but I just want to make doubly sure that everything that can be done is being done with the LMEs, working with CCNC, with CCNC Network to coordinate that medical care, because there's for two things, one for quality perspective for the patient, but also very candidly, that's a way that we can manage dollars by doing that, and particularly a number of individuals in some of these populations are very high users of medical services, and we have to make sure we have an appropriate handle on that. And I know that sometimes when you've got organizations like LMEs and you've got other organizations like CCNC, sometimes it's not, you know, where the rubber meets the road, you don't always get the exchange of vital information that you need, and I think we need to make sure that's happening down, you know, at the patient level, and it's happening all across the state. So I just encourage those efforts. That's something that we're going to be looking at very closely as we move forward. One other question, and this may not be the right time to ask it, but I'll just go ahead and ask it, and you can respond to it, a little bit of a different matter, because we've had this question come up. Is it not the case that if an LME chose to contract, and they may not choose to do this, but that it is your interpretation from the legislation and from the implementation of it, that if an LME decided they wanted to contract case management services, functions, they could certainly, they are certainly free to do that. Is that not correct?
That is correct. That is one of the things that is listed as can be contracted out.
Okay, so anybody that would call in and say, hey, this is not, we're being told something different out in the field, that would not be correct and would be, that would, misconception or misinformation would be corrected.
I think what has caused some of the confusion is that what does stay with the LME that cannot be contracted out is care coordination. And in the current system that we have, we kind of merge the case management and care coordination function. What the legislation does is split those two things out to a certain extent so that the LME MCO has the care coordination function, and they are able, if they choose, to contract out some of the case management function.
And not to get too far in the weeds right now, but the strategic plan will outline what's sort of in those definitions of the types of services specifically being provided under those, under care coordination and case management.
We can do that. I'll have to go back and look at every action step that we have, but we do have in there that we will be reporting to you the number of MCOs that choose to do that contracting out. So in order to do that, we'll have to have some definition of how we collect that data.
Okay, well, some definition of what those actually services actually mean and look like would be helpful. Thank you.
Representative Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Melcher, when you're talking about the LMEs, what about formularies? Are they gonna, I mean, does that fall in something that has to be consistent, or can each LME develop their own? And I mean,
formularies in terms of medication?
Yes.
I'm being told pharmacy's not covered. So that would still be.
Can you explain that a little bit? I'm sorry. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry. This is Michael Watson. Pharmacy is paid for directly on a statewide basis. It's not part of the Medicaid capitation that's given to each LME. So they're not setting individual pharmacies of around specific drugs. That's statewide Medicaid policy.
Thank you.
Any additional questions from Senator Tucker?
Just a couple of questions, Dr. Melcher. Would you do me a favor and allow me to ask some hearsay questions, and then you can respond to them directly? First of all, PBH comes in and merges with an LME. They take it over, those that have happened. I assume that the savings that we are trying to achieve would come from consolidation of administration services. I remember some of the LMEs had a 19-20% administrative cost. Have there been, with the consolidations and mergers, I guess merger is the correct term, a number of people who've lost their jobs, such as IT or the executive director or members of the staff?
Every one of those MCOs has a staffing plan and an implementation plan that they need to tell us what that is. In some cases, there have been people that have not been continued. In some cases, people have different jobs. So when that MCO presents whatever their staffing pattern is, some of the current employees are certainly eligible to apply for those positions. There has been a consolidation, and part of the capitation, how the capitation is determined, assumes an administrative cost savings in it.
Follow-up on a different question. You had up there October 1st, 2011. Forgive me, I was not at the last meeting. Did that report come to the legislature on time, or?
That's what I was just reporting to him. You should get that by the end of next week or early next. Given the volume of comments we received, it just took us a little bit longer, so we're a couple weeks behind, but you should have that very shortly.
Okay, and you said there were 63 legal pages, I believe, of comments and or questions about the program. You know, one of the things we heard in a lot of our meetings during the legislative session is from the folks that actually receive the care, the patients and or their families. And, you know, I know we can beat this horse to death, but they say that they don't have enough input as a stakeholder. And I assume that survey was part of it. Are there a fair number of people on this task force that are recipients of the services? And, you know, that's one question. And then the last question is, some of the providers have talked about redundant audits, inability to receive cash flow. Is that happening to the providers as well? That'll conclude my questions, Mr. Chairman.
Let me respond first to the input. I wish that I knew of a perfect system to get everybody's input. I don't know of anyone that's discovered that. What we really need to do is develop multiple ways for people to give us input. This was our first attempt. We didn't have a lot of time to do it. We do have, going forward, a mechanism for input on that IMT, which is actually the actual implementation, how is it going in your community. We will be developing this larger structure, and we're still having conversations and initiating conversations about who are the best folks to serve on that. I think the challenge we always have is how to get down to that very individual service recipient and get their input. You can always do customer satisfaction kinds of surveys. You can do sort of town hall meeting kinds of things. One of the things we expect the MCOs is to conduct those kinds of meetings so that they are getting information from their constituents and provide input. So I think that there's not a way to do it, and that we have to try multiple ways, and we will probably learn and hear from our stakeholders on the best ways to do that going forward. But it's certainly our intent to try and get a broad range of opinions and input from many different constituent groups. Your second question was about?
Some of the providers have talked about redundant audits and things that are having to be done by the agency, and that they are impeding their ability to be able to provide services because it's very costly. And then secondly, they've had some interruptions in cash flow as you go through all the minutia setting this whole new scenario up with the PBH and the MCOs. And they're saying that some of the LMEs are very, very resistant to the change and have dug in and said they're not going to do it, and it's not going as smoothly as maybe some tell us is.
There's probably a few questions in that one. One is about the multiple audits, and that probably is in existence now in our current system, and we've heard that. I think to a certain extent, as you move into the MCO and you have one entity who is managing a provider network, our expectation is that those multiple layers would get less. But I think we have to be very mindful and watch that process to make sure that we don't add layers on. The cash flow issue, again, I think is not an MCO issue. That may be related to some of our state cash flow issues and the payment to the LMEs, and there's probably people better than I to address that that directly. As far as the MCOs or LMEs and whether they want to move forward or not, this is not a mandatory process. Each LME decided whether or not they wanted to become an MCO, whether they wanted to merge or join with someone else to do that. We have not had that experience. Actually, it has been quite remarkable to me in terms of the short time frame the LMEs have come together to consolidate and to create their agreements around who is going to become an MCO. That's been a huge amount of work in the community and with county commissioners to achieve that. So that really has not been our experience. We've had a very good partnership, and I think that will become even stronger going forward.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I believe that Secretary Kanzler may have some additional comments for that.
I just wanted to mention a couple things following up on what Beth has just said. One is with respect to the payments, we continue to have cash flow issues in the mental health arena, and it's basically a carryover from one year to the next. And so what happens is right now we've got probably $30 million worth of unpaid bills because we have a monthly allotment of cash, and we work to try to catch those up. Part of that's because the hospitals and other facilities have not been totally funded for a while, and we're having to find cash to do that. Part of it's because we're running out of cash at the end of one year before the end of the year and trying to deal with the next, and this just has been a carryover kind of situation. So while we're trying to catch up, it's difficult to catch up with when budget cuts have been put in place and we're behind already. And so we're trying to do that. So we realize as we go to the MCOs that we begin paying a premium as opposed to paying for services. And so sooner or later, we got to get that reconciled, and that may require some help from you in the process. We're trying very hard to review all of our audit and review processes. I actually suspended certain audits of mental health providers related to cost report audits because we weren't using that cost information for anything. We were requiring it in order to develop rates. But right now, we're not adjusting rates upwards because we don't have the money, so I saw no need for the providers to continue to give us audited cost reports and incur that cost whenever, in fact, it wasn't doing any good for anybody. There's some other things we're trying to do to streamline so we don't send a half a dozen people out from different divisions to look at that to see if we can't find ways to send one team one time so it doesn't interrupt so often. So there's a number of things like that that we're also trying to do. And just let me say, with respect to your first question, because I think this is important, one of the things we're trying to do with our DHHS Excels initiative is to be collaborative, get input from all the players in these things. The difficult thing is there's a lot of people out there with a lot of different ideas. If you look among the providers, if you look among the consumers, and it's obviously impossible for everybody to be at the table every time we meet. And sometimes folks equate input with getting things done their way, and that doesn't always happen because we can't do it that way. But we're constantly, through the customer satisfaction and the whole thing of setting the MCs up, MCOs up, managed care organizations up, and requiring consumer satisfaction reviews of what the consumers think, et cetera, we're trying to find ways to get that input as much as we can in making the decision, just like we have with in developing the strategic plan, just like Steve Jordan is getting ready to tell you about the cap waiver, trying to get input from different groups. And not always does people agree with the person we have at the table. And so it's a challenge, but we're dedicated to try to do that as best we can.
Senator Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Melcher, early on we heard a lot of concern by the disability population about and PVH, and a lot were not satisfied how that was handled by PVH. And I just wonder if that's an issue now, if that's a matter that's been dealt with.
I think that there are always areas and ways that we can improve, no matter what. I think what PBH has been open to is getting input from their service recipients in getting information on customer satisfaction. They certainly have had numerous community forums to try and hear from people. I think they would be the first ones to say there's always room for improvement and things that they could do better. I think what we want to do as we move forward and as we get more experience with more MCOs, my hope is that we develop and create and learn from each other on new ways that we can incorporate the consumer satisfaction. There are requirements from CMS around appeal rights and input and responsiveness of customer service, and we will certainly be monitoring all of those elements on all the MCOs going forward.